And now, you're tuned in to RBLR, the home of Tampa Bay's Reveler Sports.
Welcome back, everybody, to your RBLR Rays show. With me is Pat Davenport on a very unfortunate Saturday after the wild card round. Pat, how are you doing?
I'm doing better than I was doing on Wednesday, that's for sure. I mean, we were all getting set for an ALDS preview starting tonight against the Orioles. On Tuesday, I was even doing some homework on the Orioles and everything like that. I was like, we got to be ready. I wasn't expecting the post-mortem to take place today, but here we are. How are you doing today, Zach?
I am doing similarly much better today than I was doing earlier in the week. It's been a tough couple nights since it ended. It's funny that the night that we lost, my wife very kindly took me out to Olive Garden to make me feel better, which definitely helped. Have you ever been to an Olive Garden?
I don't think I have been to an Olive Garden. You know, it's an Italian place, right? I think it's a breadstick thing.
The breadsticks are amazing. They're currently doing an endless pasta thing right now, which I took part in, which was very, very good. And if you out there continue to enjoy taking part in the RBLR Rays podcast and our network of podcasts, continue to like, subscribe. We're going to be doing some, hopefully going to be doing some fun things in the offseason. Not hopefully, we will be doing some fun things in the offseason. So make sure you're sticking around for that. Subscribe on YouTube. We're only building up there, building and building there. We're going to have some fun stuff coming in the off season. Make sure you are a part of what we are building. And, you know, we had hoped, like you said, we had hoped to be doing a preview of the ADLS today, but unfortunately that was not meant to be, as the Rays fall in a sweep to the Texas Rangers at home to end their postseason hopes, their dreams, the plans that we kind of all had that we thought we, you know, I think we were talking about this as it was happening. When it seemed that the Texas Rangers were going to fall to us and that's who we were going to end up playing, we were kind of positive. We were like, okay, I think we have a chance. I think we can put a good series together against their pitching staff, and I think we can pull out a win here. And that is not what happened at all, unfortunately.
No. I mean, all the stars seem to align pretty well. I was even talking to a few of my friends going, God, I hope it falls that we get Texas in the wild card round before Sunday's game. I was like, if we can get Texas, that'll be really good. The stars were aligned for a really favorable playoff matchup. Their pitching on paper was not looking great, particularly their bullpen. They were going to be demoralized after dropping the division on the last day to the Mariners. They scored zero runs, a prolifically very good offense, scored zero runs and dropped three or four in a potential clinching series to those Mariners. So they were on a losing skid and had kind of been on a bad run of form since August, really. And also, they had to take the longest flight you could possibly take on Major League Baseball from Seattle to Tampa. Yep. And they were going to be tired, right? Tired, sad. They used a couple of their really good pitchers already. Bad run of form. The Rays, they knew that this was coming. They were at home. It all seemed to be lining up, and that's not what happened at all. We, of course, dropped the first game 4-0 to those Texas Rangers. Jordan Montgomery was on his A game, was absolutely outstanding. And the Rays' postseason scoring drought just continued even further. And then, of course, game two, that was a 7-1 loss to an excellent Nate Eovaldi start. And how many times has he been a thorn in the Rays' side during a postseason, particularly in the Red Sox uniform, but he continues that trend in a Rangers uniform. And we managed to avoid the longest postseason scoring drought by one out. We managed to just about avoid that. We made, I believe, 5 or 6 errors across that series.
Five total errors, officially.
4 of which in game one. And it was just not the team we have seen all year. The team we've been seeing all year was not the team that turned up to that Texas series. What? I guess I'll start, Zach, by asking, what went wrong?
Well, I think what went wrong was the team just came out flat-footed. I think the pitching was fine. When you look at the runs that we gave up, almost all of them were in some way connected, except for the couple of home runs we gave up. Almost the rest of the runs were sort of connected to a defensive error somewhere along the line. An inning was extended. You know, some runs were just blatantly scored on errors. You know, Tyler Glasnow in his start gives up three, and those innings, you know, were difficult innings for him to have to get through because of the errors. And you have to wonder how much different his start would have looked if he doesn't have to waste those extra bullets earlier in the game and to be put in those stressful situations in early innings, which he got put in a couple jams early in the game that he got out of and then was not unable to get us some jams later in the game. But you know, he pitched through some stuff, and you have to wonder how different, you know, that game looks if he does not have to pitch through those issues. And it was just sloppy defense. And, you know, it's the impact of we've lost some guys. Some guys have been injured, and that kind of came home to roost a little bit from a defensive perspective. We just did not perform the way we have always performed. A lot of our guys who we expect to be, you know, out there and our defensive stalwarts were either not there, not available, or they were injured. You know, it was pretty obvious to me Siri was not ready to come back, and he just rushed it, no. Which I don't really blame him for, because I would do the same thing. Like if I am physically capable of playing, I'm going to play. If I'm physically capable of going to work, I'm going to go to work. It is what it is. You would have maybe liked to see Cash and the team have a little more discernment maybe and just say, hey, wait it out. But I also don't know how much different the series would have been with Margot out there, because he made some errors too. He made the big error in the first game, or in the second game, tripping over himself to get to a fly ball deep center field. So, you know, it's very clear that this team was just not locked in defensively, and that kind of bled over everywhere else. Because I think when you have those defensive miscues, it affects your mentality, because you have to then go from messing up defensively, then go lock back in on the offensive side and perform. And I think it definitely affected everybody. You know, Randy was pretty good throughout the entire series, and he didn't really make any errors, or he didn't really have any issues defensively. And he was pretty good throughout the entire series. Yandy kind of bounced back from his defensive miscues and played pretty well in the second game. Didn't have much offensive impact in the first game. But then again, not many guys did have offensive impact throughout the series. And it was just, it just goes to show you that no matter how good your team is, if you put them in a 2-game sample size, you may not get the best results. And that's just the nature of baseball. It's part of what makes it so difficult to play an entire season and then have it all come down to just a couple games. And it's the way baseball's always been. I don't really like it. I don't feel like it's a true representation of this team. And the players were all saying that after the game. Basically, all of them were like, this is not what we built. This is not who we are as a team. And it was just disappointing to go out that way. And, you know, there were some chances late in the game. You know, I do think the final pitch of game two was not a strike. And it was unfortunate to see the game end that way, because they were kind of building a little bit of a rally there, and they were getting ready to turn the lineup over. So who knows what would have happened if they were able to turn the lineup over. It was clearly a struggling reliever, and then we got to bring in another reliever. Who knows? Maybe they can pull off some magic, but they don't. The umpiring was really bad across both games.
Yeah, Montgomery was seeing all of the outside pitches all going his way.
Yep, and it was pretty embarrassing. I think if you're, and I tweeted about it, I'm like, are we really going to be okay with this, Major League Baseball? Are we really going to be okay with the umpiring, the state of the umpiring in your playoffs? Are we really okay with that? Because I feel like you can't be, you cannot just be fine with obviously blatantly wrong calls, consistently blatantly wrong calls that are going in one team's direction in a win or go home game and in a very short series overall. So, you know, my big takeaway was just that they didn't play their best game. It just is what it is. And when you only get 2 games to play, if you don't play your best game in those 2 games, it doesn't matter how good you are all the rest of the year. It's unfortunate, but I can't really say what I would have done differently. You know, it just kind of was what it was.
Yeah, I completely agree with everything you've said. This is the last time this season that I'm going to say this is why we had to try and push for that division. And we did. We absolutely did try and push for that division. And we came up short. But this is the difference, right? Because who's to say that if we had one extra day, one day traveling and getting our head back in the game, maybe we pull off three in a row. Maybe we get back going. Maybe Savali has the chance to pull off last week's prediction of mine, which was to throw seven innings. But it was really disappointing. And I want to reiterate that fans were extremely disappointed in their team. And I think they have every right to be disappointed in the performance on the field. I think that team on this week did not show up and play baseball. It was representative of what we've seen the rest of the year, injuries or not. And you got to wonder how that happened mentally. I don't know how that tone got out of whack a little bit. Yandy, for a guy that's been with us for every season of this five straight playoff run, seemed like he was super nervous, which was strange. It was strange. I don't know what was going on there, especially in game one. He seemed really nervous and as if he was putting a lot of pressure on himself to succeed. And I don't know if that's because the rest of the lineup around him felt depleted and he had to be the guy to get things started or what, but everyone was playing way in their own heads and they were pressing, and it was reminiscent of their July offensive performance where they weren't looking at many pitches. They were swinging early in counts. They were doing some really strange swing decisions on pitches that were well out of the zone. And the playoffs are a coin flip, and we know this. The playoffs are extremely a crapshoot. That's what they say. And unfortunately, it felt like the Rays weighted the coin in the wrong direction by not setting a competitive tone in that series. And that's a real shame. However, just like you said, I think we need to set the record straight that a two-game series of any part in the season, whether it was while we were going 13-0 or while it was we were on the eight-game losing streak at the start of July or in this playoff series, it's not representative of the roster construction, the management style, the way this team does things from a baseball perspective. A two-game sample size is not representative of that. And to make any kind of prediction or call on the roster construction, on how the games were managed, on anything really, is setting yourself up to look a bit foolish, I think. And I think we've got to try and keep a level head now, thinking about this team going forward before we make any rash decisions.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think the roster construction point is one where you really can't say that Rays did not construct a good roster for this postseason, because guess what? Five of the maybe 10 best players on the team were not available for the postseason. Three of your starters and your maybe two best position players. You can make an argument here and there. I mean, maybe Yandy and Randy are two of your best, but the two of your other best position players in Brandon Lau and your starting shortstop were not available for this series for various reasons, all of which being completely out of control of the Rays. And I think if you take the five best players out of any team in Major League Baseball, or five of their top 10 players out of any team in Major League Baseball, they're not winning 99 games. When you look at the Orioles, who were their injuries? Who were their injured players this year? Basically nobody. When you look at teams in the NL, like, you know, the Braves, who were their injuries this year? Very few. Charlie Morton was their only, you know, major injury, really. And they have such a prolific offense, it basically didn't matter. When you look at these other teams that are winning more games than the Rays, all of them basically had in common no injury issues, almost across the board. Very, very, very few injury issues. And as a result, they're getting to the postseason healthy, and that is manifesting in their performance. I think a significant portion of why this team struggled is exactly what you mentioned. People are pressing because they feel like they have to control the lineup. And the thing that I think is disappointing to me anyway is that we have been here before. I do kind of look at Yandy a little bit. Yandy is the one that I look at a little bit because I'm like, you've been here before. We've been in this situation before where you had guys that were injured and you were kind of having to be the guy, and you've kind of seen what's happened when you've tried to press. And it's like, you know, I'm not going to come be too harsh on him because of he's been the best player on the team all throughout the year. So I'm not going to be too harsh, but it is a little disappointing because you might think, well, you've been here before. You've been in this exact scenario before, and yet the result seems to be kind of similar. Again, game two, he had a much better game. So maybe I give him a pass for game one. But still, it definitely feels like a lot of our players were pressing. I think the most disappointing, performance of the series, for me anyway, was Paredes. I kind of just expected more out of him. There wasn't a whole lot of power on display from him. He ends up batting like 3 for 8, which is, not horrible, but there no home runs and no home runs at all in the entire series. No. Not from Randy, not from Paredes, not from Yandy, just nothing. Two extra base hits all series. Crazy. And to be fair to Randy, he had one of those extra base hits. So Randy was not the problem by far. Randy was not the issue, but nobody was the solution, like in previous years, he had been the solution and he was not the problem, but he was not the solution this year. And is it fair to ask him to be the solution by himself? Probably not. And I'm not going to ask him to be the solution, but he wasn't. And so at the end of the day, nobody stepped up. Nobody like put the team on their back and said, I'm going to carry you. And I'm going to move you forward. We're gonna get to the promised land. Didn't really have that. The pitching was again fine, nobody was excellent. Glasnow and Eflin were both put in bad situations for sure by the defense, but they both allowed a combined 7 runs. So at the end of the day, that's not what we've expected and not what we've seen from them all season. And again, I would have expected the offense to score more than four runs in both games, and they scored a grand total of 1 in both. So that definitely wasn't their fault necessarily. But again, nobody like stepped up and was the guy. Nobody was, kind of stepped up and went above and beyond to try to carry the team. And unfortunately, when everybody else was kind of all playing poorly, there just wasn't one guy to step up, and it was sad to watch. It was very disheartening to watch. It was a sad way to end a very, resilient season for this team. And I don't want to forget that. Let's not forget how resilient this team has been to do what they did, but it was definitely a disappointing ending.
Absolutely. To ask a difficult question, there were reports between games 1 and 2. During game 2, it came out that prior to that elimination game, the Rays were keeping it loose in the clubhouse. They were playing table tennis. They were like seeming very calm, very composed, very collected. Do you think there was a miscue in how the Rays approached that game from a calm and loose perspective? Do you think they should have went for a kind of, no, you need to lock in, no music allowed, you are locked in, you don't get to do anything until you prove that you can win approach, hard-nosed old school? Or do you think that they should have kept it loose?
When you go in to a postseason series, the number one thing you can do to ensure that you're going to lose is to change the way you've been doing things. And the way that they were acting behind the scenes is the way they've been doing things all year. So if you go in there and you say, hey, we're going to change it, we're going to do this new thing now because we need to win, not going to happen. Like, clearly they were already tense and already tight. So, amplifying that even more so would not have helped. I think Kevin Cash saw that his team was tense and did whatever he could to try to loosen that tension. It didn't work, but what else can you do? Like clearly the team was tense and you can't, there's nothing you can do about that. You cannot you can't give everybody a back massage and then they'll be fine. Like, that's not how it works. When you have that tension in your body because of your nervousness or whatever you're feeling, it's very, very difficult beyond the person just releasing that energy on their own, especially given the time frame. There's very little you can do about that. And so I think Cash did the right thing. Like, let's keep it light because that's the only thing you really can do. Because if you kind of try to, double down on how tense everybody is, that's only going to make it worse, in my opinion. Maybe you disagree, but I don't think that being more tense was going to solve anything.
No. And to follow up from Ben, who used to be a school teacher, well, he still is a school teacher, and he would often use those analogies in how you conduct man management in a professional setting. And I'm also a school teacher, so those analogies are not going to stop. When kids get stressed about exams, get stressed about a performance, get stressed about a presentation, get stressed about any high pressure scenario in a setting that revolves around them performing well. You, no one in their right mind would go up to them and say, you better lock it in right now. You better make sure you do the best possible job, because if you mess this up, it's all over for all of us and it'll be on you. We don't do that, because that would make things way worse. That would send anxiety levels skyrocketing. They know exactly what's at stake. They know that they need to perform in order to come back in that series. They know what that takes as well. They're professionals. And Kevin Cash, by keeping it loose, showed his trust in his team and showed that he's like, you guys have got this. I know you guys are good at this. You don't need to think any differently about how you're going to do this, because I know you're good and putting on a good performance will come naturally to you. It didn't pan out, but that the kind of, you know, no manager should show a lack of faith in their team. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you're dooming them to fail. So I'm completely with you, Zach, that Kevin Cash did the right thing of keeping things loose, and that he did a great job about man management. And that leads me on to a greater point about Kevin Cash, I think. There was a lot of discussion about Kevin Cash and his future with the team. There's even been people talking about him leaving come next year. Which is a shock to me. I didn't know he was unhappy with the team. And I don't think the team are unhappy with him in any particular way. But I think managing in baseball is a really tough thing to quantify, right? Manager of the Year almost seems like it's randomly distributed year to year. There's no like set criteria that gets you Manager of the Year. It's usually just who outperforms expectations the most. There's a surprise team every year. Who was the surprise team? They get Manager of the Year is usually how it works.
Pretty much.
Because it's so hard to quantify what a good manager does, especially in 2023 baseball. And you can argue how much this is the case for team to team, where the front office have more control over in-game decisions than ever before, right? People argue that Kevin Cash is very spreadsheet. You know, he only makes his move based off spreadsheets he makes moves based on putting people in the best position to succeed based on the information he's given. But if the manager has it all mapped out for him on a spreadsheet, what the best move is, and you don't have to go by gut feel anymore. What makes a good manager? I would say a good manager is someone that helps his team feel comfortable and directs his team to go out and give their best performance every single day, no matter what. That's what a good manager does. He's responsible for making sure the team goes out there and delivers a good performance every day. And whether that's by giving some tough love to some players, whether that's encouraging and giving a soft approach to some players, is being in charge of their development as players. And Kevin Cash is an excellent man manager. And I think there's so many great examples of this. But his job is to make sure that the team feel comfortable. And ask anybody, this team feels comfortable. And anyone that was a former Ray will also say they feel comfortable. And they're always impressed by the culture that is set by Kevin Cash in the clubhouse and how welcoming they are to anyone. What do you think about Kevin Cash and his merits as a future Rays manager?
I think there is a chance that Kevin Cash isn't the manager of the Rays in 2024. That's if the Mets give him an offer and say, hey, you want to come manage the biggest payroll in all of baseball and manage in New York? Maybe, but that's the only scenario in which Kevin Cash is not the manager of this team for years and years to come, is if somebody blows him away with an incredible offer from one of these big market teams, which by the way, if you're the Mets and you're not calling Kevin Cash, you're stupid. I just want to point that. I'm just going to say that because, if Steve Cohen is not on the phone, especially now that the postseason is over, calling Kevin Cash and asking him if he wants to come manage his team, he's an idiot. But I don't think Kevin Cash is going to leave. I think he's in a very good situation for him. His family's here in Tampa. I don't expect him to leave. But any discussion about him being relieved of his duties as manager is delusional, because what do you actually, when you look at what people are just saying, we should fire Kevin Cash. What decisions did Kevin Cash make that you disagree with in the postseason? I have one decision that I was like, I didn't really like that. And that was bringing in Devinsky in game one. When they did, I would have gone to somebody else. And maybe I think a lot of Rays fans didn't love that. But I can still see the rationale, because you probably were thinking, well, if we can get out of this inning only using Devinsky, then we have all our high leverage guys for later in the game. I can see why he did that. He leans towards, I'm going to put faith in this guy to perform. And if he doesn't perform, then it is what it is. He doesn't really manage scared. You know, he does not. He manages with confidence to say, I believe this guy's going to perform well, and I'm going to put him in this position to succeed because I believe he can perform. And I think that's the right way to do things, even though I wouldn't have done that personally. Would I have broken glass in case of Bob Steve need and thrown him out there? I would have. That's who I would have put out there. But guess what? I'm not the manager of the Tampa Bay Rays. I have this Rays shirt on, but I am not the manager, nor will I ever be the manager of the Tampa Bay Rays. So I'm really not gonna question his decisions too much. I didn't love it. The other big thing that people were talking about that they didn't like was putting Walls out there starting instead of Caminero. People wanted Caminero starting instead of Taylor Walls. And to those people, I say, you're just being a little too optimistic, my friend, to believe that you could send Junior Caminero out there to man shortstop, the most important defensive position on the diamond, when with clearly an already struggling defense overall. And then you're going to put Junior Caminero out there in the postseason for his first postseason start. Go play shortstop, kid. Have fun. How well do you think that would have gone? How well do you think that would have affected his hitting ability? Because he actually did put together two really nice at-bats. They didn't amount to anything, which, by the way, Walls actually did have a couple hits in the series. So he was actually contributing offensively, and Caminero did not. Although he did put together two really good at-bats, and the pitch he struck out on, I think in game one, was not a strike, and I actually was really mad because that was kind of there was a rally building too. There was at least twice rallies were extinguished with bad calls against the Rays, which is very frustrating. But throwing Caminero out there would have been exactly the wrong decision to make. That's a great way to stunt someone's development, because then he's going to have the echoes of his potentially poor performance if he doesn't perform well in his head for the rest of his, you know, next couple of years. He's going to be seeing those ghosts of, you know, the ground ball he missed, or the three times he struck out, or whatever. And maybe he goes in as a great performance, but the odds are that's not what's going to happen. Much better to say, let's use him in specific spots and see if he can provide a spark. And he almost did both times. He put together good at bats both times he was out there. So I think they used him correctly, but putting them out there to start was just not the solution. Like there was not a good, like a Mac, the best solution for your shortstop is not available. Just isn't.
Yeah.
So you had to go with a suboptimal solution, and it is just what it is. And Taylor Walls, I think, performed fine. Defensively, the whole team had issues. He had some issues too. I guarantee you Caminero would not have been any better if you threw him out there. One game of pretty good shortstop defense does not a starting shortstop make. I'm sorry. He played one game at shortstop in the regular season, and people were going to throw him out there for the postseason. I'm sorry. No, that's not a good decision. It's not going to end well for anybody. So when you had these people then calling for his job, based on what? Please, if you're out there listening to this and you disagree with me, by all means, comment. You know, at me on Twitter, DM me. Please tell me what you think Kevin Cash.
It's because Jose Siri bunted in game one and Jordan Montgomery made an amazing play on it. And
diving
that's Kevin Cash's fault.
And that's the truth. At the end of the day, what happened was not his fault. If you want to say that maybe he should have handled the motivation of his players differently in between games, whatever. I don't really think there's any way for us to know what he could have done differently. Didn't seem like, you know, he could have done much differently. From a managerial decision perspective, I don't have an issue with any one of his decisions at all. I would have done basically the same thing that he did for the most part, except for Devinsky, but I don't necessarily, you know, I don't fault him for that, but I would have done it differently. Otherwise, I have no problem with any of the other decisions that he made basically throughout the series. So when people come and say we need to get rid of Kevin Cash, based on what? Based on him soon to be – is he the winningest manager in Rays history yet? If he isn't, he's going to be
close.
Soon. He's pretty close. He will soon be the winningest manager in Rays history. He is the longest tenured manager in MLB right now. With Terry Francona retiring, he is the longest tenured manager in all of MLB. And that is not going to change anytime soon unless somebody blows him away with an offer, which, by the way, if the Rays did fire him, he would walk out the door. And before he got to his car, somebody would be handing him a pen to sign a new contract for their team, because that is how good of a manager he is and how short of good managers there is out there. Like,
whenever, that's my point as well.
Yeah, go ahead.
What, for who? Who for would who? We get in instead? Kevin Cash, Craig Counsell. He's going to go to the Mets. Like, probably.
Buck Showalter? Yeah.
Like, let's look at the good managers in baseball right now. And by good, we mean they're on good teams, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's what makes a good manager, right? Is that they're on teams that do well. Okay. Brian Snitker. Do you know what happened to Brian Snitker in 2022? Bounced out in the first round. Mm-hmm. Does that mean that we should fire Brian Snitker? Craig Counsell. Often regarded as a top three manager in baseball every single year he's been with the Brewers. Always bounced out in the first round. Is he a bad manager? Do we need to fire him from the Brewers? Dave Roberts. Yeah. Until 2020, how many times did Dave Roberts get bounced out before they were supposed to?
Every single year.
What do you mean Kevin Cash is a good regular season manager but can't manage in the playoffs? It's the same. It's the same thing. Every team gets bounced out of the playoffs in the first round. It just so happens that we've got unfortunate 3 years in a row. That Red Sox series in 2021, what was Kevin Cash supposed to do about an unlucky bounce over the wall when Hunter Renfro biffed that ball? What were we supposed to do when nobody scored any runs in 2022 when all of our best hitters were either in severe slumps or injured?
Yep.
What was he supposed to do this year when three of his five starting rotation players were injured and we were losing a generational shortstop? And I just don't understand how any of this is on Kevin Cash and what he's been doing. If anything, he should be he was the manager of the year in 2021 and we got bounced in the first round. It makes no sense to me. It makes no sense to me. There's nobody that could replace Kevin Cash and do a better job than what he's doing right now. Yeah. There isn't one. There isn't one. I could not name a single person that I'd be like, you know what? Out of the current crop of managers right now, I think they'd be a better fit for the Rays than Kevin Cash. Craig Counsell is like a lateral move. It's a step sideways.
Yep.
It's that, like, and I'd rather not take a step sideways because, do you know what? Every good organization has stability and leadership.
Mm-hmm.
So it winds me up to no end to hear, and you can probably tell that Kevin Cash. I don't know. There's been two managers that have won back-to-back Manager of the Year awards, and they're Bobby Cox and Kevin Cash.
Yeah, and again, the point that you make about who you're going to hire is whenever anyone ever calls for the firing of a coach or the firing of somebody in leadership in a sports team, my response is almost always, for who? Like, for example, I'm a Florida Gators fan, which, by the way, Can somebody please win a game? One of my teams. I'm a Patriots fan. We got our doors blown off by Dallas. We get beat by Kentucky, and then I have to deal with this. Like, I'm in a bad.
I'm
place
a Man
right
United
now.
Fan. I know all about it.
I'm a Ricky Fowler fan. Dude, like, basically chokes the Ryder Cup away. Not really. He didn't. He actually played pretty well, and I think it was a pretty good matchup with Fleetwood. But like, I'm having a rough go. Like, somebody needs to win. Like, if Florida doesn't beat Vanderbilt today, you may just not see me for a week or two, because I am just going through it right now. We lost, Patriots lost their two best defensive players are probably to season-ending injuries. I'm going through it right now. But anyway, Florida is going through a very similar thing right now, where a lot of people are calling for the head coach's job. And what I always say is, you really want to upend your stability that you have from a leadership perspective. You really want to get into that, whirlwind. You really want to go look at who's actually available right now. Who are you going to hire? Who's going to be better? Like, they just don't grow on trees. They just don't. And I think it's a lot of people just looking for somewhere to, you know, to put blame and to put their frustration, and they're going to point at the manager. And that's just kind of what it is. And it's unfortunate. But if you out there in the audience are looking for somewhere to put your dollars and your cents and your hard earned money, I have a place where you can do that. And that is at shop.rblrsports.com. Got it right this time. Yes. Shop.rblrsports.com, where you can get 10% off of everything there with promo code Flappy. If you need a little pick me up from this unfortunate run of form for the Rays in the postseason, how about buying a Bring Back the Devil shirt or any of the other awesome shirts that we have online there? Using promo code Flappy, you can get some of that awesome merch and send some of your hard earned dollars and cents there to help support us, which we really appreciate. And you can get 10% off of that with promo code Flappy. So if you have some desire to improve your form in your fashion, go to shop.rblrsports.com. Andy, did you have any other comments about Kevin Cash or any other thoughts about that? There's one other big thing that has been discussed in the discourse. We'll get to that. But any other thoughts on Kevin Cash before we move to that final, you know, lynchpin?
Just that like, I used to dislike Kevin Cash when he first arrived. I'm not like a guy that used to always love. I didn't always love Kevin Cash because he took over in 2015 and the team were bad. So I was like, oh, this would never have happened under Joe Maddon. Mm-hmm. And he's changed my mind completely. I'm a Kevin Cash ride or die guy. And I don't. Yeah, I just know that the grass is not always greener. Look at the Mets. Just changing managers is not gonna change a talented team's fortunes by itself.
No. Well, and did the Padres fire their manager? Did they? I can't remember if they did or not.
A couple years ago now they did.
Have they fired him again? I can't remember if they did.
Melvin's still there for now, but we're not sure.
I would actually say the Rays actually should be slightly concerned, because some of these high dollar, like big market teams, which are the only real reason I think that he would ever consider leaving the Rays, are kind of coming open. Like, you know, the Mets job is going to be attractive because of the money that's going to be spent. They're going to restructure the team. They're going to say 2024 is a wash and 2025 is our year. So they're going to give somebody a chance to set up their system and then move into 2025. So it's kind of an attractive job. And I don't think that he's going to go there. But, you know, that's definitely something to watch. Because I think that if they are looking for a proven manager, there's really only one, like, really good option who's even potentially going to leave. But I really don't think Kevin Cash is going to leave the team. But that's the guy I would call if I was Steve Cohen.
It's easy for me to say this, but I don't think I would touch a New York manager job in any sport with a 10-foot pole. It would That's be fair. So much of a headache to deal with everything. And like, it's all under the microscope, every single thing that you do or say. Yeah. Like, look how Aaron Boone is treated with the Yankees. I don't think he's the best manager ever, but I think, you know, he's not the worst manager ever either. But he's probably the most hated man in New York just because the Yankees don't do very well, even though they were really injured. I mean, that was more of a roster construction thing, but I digress. So let's just cool our jets on Kevin Cash and just pray that he sticks around. He's under contract next season, and then he's got an option, a club option for 2025, which I think the Rays would absolutely pick up.
For sure.
Unless we got 120 losses last year or something like that.
Right. Like, I doubt it. And they probably will look to extend him sometime during the next season, would be my assumption. They may even do it this offseason.
Give him a blank check.
Yeah, I mean, I would, especially considering that there are some jobs going to be coming open. I would be saying, let's just take care of this right now, extend him, and be done with it. But that's just me. The other big thing that has sort of dominated the discussion following these two games, we haven't mentioned it yet, but the other big thing that's dominated the discussion of these two games has been the fan attendance. Of these two games, fan attendance for the first game was, I believe, just a little bit over 19,000 fans at the game, and then the second game was a little over 20, I believe, thousand, a little bit better the second game. The first game was like just one above the lowest ever for a playoff game. And so there was a lot of discussion around what's going on. Why is this happening? This is embarrassing if you're a Rays fan, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What are your thoughts on that whole debate and discussion?
I mean, just like the team's performance, it was disappointing, but not indicative of the Rays support in Tampa, I think. Yes, it was awful optics and, you know, almost embarrassing to watch on TV as those horrible announcers from ABC just started to degrade the fan base of the Rays at every chance that they could get, which was extremely unprofessional in my opinion. But there's all, when things like that happen, it's newsworthy because it's odd. Okay. And how do odd things happen? Through odd circumstances. And we had some extremely odd circumstances leading up to the attendance of those two games. I mean, the first thing is that it was on a Tuesday and Wednesday at 3 p.m. local time, which for the vast majority of people is a time where you are at work or school. This means that for many people, they were forced with either losing a day pay, risking their jobs entirely, or giving up a valuable sick day, which could be used later down the line. Winter is coming, and putting that on the line to go watch a baseball game, which I don't want to tell people where their priorities lie. Everyone has different things in their lives going on. So I don't want to say that you need to attend a baseball game over your livelihood, right? And I think a big part of that was also just the amount of notice that they were given that it was at these times. They announced the times of the series, I believe, late Sunday night, which is less than 48 hours before the game, which is just not fair on people that had even bought tickets, not knowing when they had to show up at the yard. So that was a terrible factor. And then a lot of the discourse, and I'll let you take the lead on this one more than me, who lives, you know, a continent away. The location of the stadium, which has been an often discussed point. Apparently, we've got to go outside of Tampa, over the bridge, to drive to St. Petersburg. And apparently, for some people, this was a factor. Do you think this was actually a factor in getting people to come to a playoff game?
I think it contributes to people not coming because they knew it was going to be, you know, a 2-hour-ish commitment to get to the game, probably, and then another hour and a half-ish to get home from the game. I think it contributed. I think the other factors that you just mentioned were a bigger contributing factor. I think that the location of the stadium is more of a something where you're going to look at. You're probably going to struggle to get to 30,000, you know, that number of fans just in general. It's going to be tough to get there like almost any time just because of the nature of, you know, where the stadium is and how to get there. By the way, there's a whole lot of construction on the only one bridge to get over there right now, which is also making things difficult. Just isn't helping. For context, I live in a different state. So I live about 7-8 hours away from the Trop. And I've been there. I have gone to a couple games over the past couple years. And certainly, you know, like for context, when I'm going to games, I'm visiting usually with my grandfather who lives in Tampa proper. So it is about that hour-ish plus drive in. And it's very easy to see how that is a, you know, a difficult thing for a lot of people. And I think what really encapsulates it is a lot of people are talking about social media saying, well, I will drive 3 hours to see, you know, this game, or I would drive, you know, 8 hours, you know, up in the snow, back in the snow, you know, to go see the Red Sox or whatever. And that's not the point, because the point is for almost any fans at all to go see the game requires a drive of that amount. Whereas with teams like the Red Sox or the Yankees, there's so many people that can just go very easily to the game without having to deal with all of that. As opposed to the Rays, they just don't have that. Just they do not have the population center near where the stadium is to allow for those kinds of crowds. They just don't, just straight up do not have it. Whereas when you rank them, the population density near to the stadium, they rank dead last in all of MLB. And Pittsburgh, which is the next closest city, doubles them in population density near the stadium. So it just is what it is. And I don't think there's really any fixing that. I think that having a more involved stadium environment with the new stadium will help things, make it more of a worth your while to go. But it's never going to make the problem totally go away. I don't think that this specific drought in fans, per se, was resulting in the St. Petersburg location. I think it has more to do with the other factors, which the work thing that you mentioned is a really good one. Like, I mean, for me personally, it'd been very difficult for me to drive 8 hours, no matter when the games were. It'd been very difficult for me to drive all the way down there. Maybe if we had gone farther in the playoffs, I would have tried to make an effort to get to a game, but it should be very difficult for me to do that economically. But it would have still been difficult for me economically to say, hey, I have to take 2 days off of work or even 1 day off of work. I'm not economically in a place right now where I can really afford to do that. And a lot of our generation is in the same boat where we cannot, you know, take that time off. And by the way, our generation is a generation that's grown up with the Rays. We're the first generation that's now coming into, you know, sort of, you know, spending age as adults that has grown up with the Rays. And our generation, a lot of us probably do not have the financial, you know, autonomy to just say, hey, I'm just going to take 2 days off because I feel like it and go to these games. A lot of us do not have that, just straight up don't. And so it was just an unfortunate set of circumstances. My theory is that the reason why it came out so late was because there was a chance that the Astros were going to play us. And I do think if the Astros played us, we would have got flexed to the later in the day spot. And they were waiting on that result. And because of that, they didn't make that move until the games were over because they were waiting to see if Houston would fall to us and at which time they would have flexed the games, which is unfortunate that they just decided to do that. Because it resulted in exactly what you said, fans having 48 hours to make all of these decisions that we're talking about and then do it. It's one thing to ask off of work a week in advance. Yeah, you might be able to do that. But to call your boss and say, hey, I'm going to need tomorrow off, out of nowhere, they're probably going to say no. So then you're using a personal day or you're getting in trouble at work. It's just not a good, situation. Same thing with kids in school. If you know weeks in advance, maybe you can make arrangements, but to do all of that with very little notice, just difficult to do. It's just difficult to do. And it's just so late notice. When you look at previous years where the Rays have had really good outcomes in day games, we had more notice. We knew farther in advance when these games were so people could make those plans. We didn't have that this year. So whenever you have a big problem like this, people are going to look for the one solution and the one cause. Maybe that's the other way. The one cause and the one solution. With every major issue in society, that's what happens. People look for the one reason and the one thing they can do to fix that reason. And almost always, there are multiple of both. And there's no one easy fix, and there's no one easy cause. And as a result of that, people get frustrated, and they just kind of, you know, yell at the problem because there isn't an easy way to fix it. There's no easy way to fix the stadium situation. There just isn't. And it probably will never be fully fixed. But to blame, you know, to blame the fans for what happened at those two games, I don't think is fair. I think the blame is squarely on the shoulders of MLB for making this decision and putting them in that situation. They did not make it easy for the consumer to consume. That's on the company. If you know, I work in retail. If somebody doesn't buy the product that we're trying to push right now, that's not the consumer's fault. That's our fault for not marketing the product, for not putting it in a place where it's easy to consume, et cetera, et cetera. It's the same thing. They did not put the product in a place where it was easy to consume. That is their fault. And that's what I'm going to stand by.
Yeah, I'm in complete agreement. And to your point, I think we need to all make sure that we are standing together as Rays fans, because MLB has consistently shown us a lack of respect, and they do not put our product, which is a quality product, Rays baseball, in a great place ever. This goes back to the All-Star game where we noticed that the Rays players were the only ones that didn't have the camera on them when they came out during the introductions, right? We know this because when was the last time we were on at the same time as another team and given a night game? When was the last time we were on ESPN Sunday Night Baseball? When was the last time any kind of marketing has come our way? And then MLB have the audacity to go, well, we can't possibly show them games because the Rays have no stars. What do you mean have the Rays have no stars? We have the American League batting champion. Everyone with a baseball brain knows Randy Arozarena. People know Shane McClanahan. He started the past two All-Star games. Like, what do you mean the Rays have no stars? It's that you refuse to make stars. If Brandon Lau was on the Yankees, he would be on the poster of every single piece of MLB merchandise. And you like to hide the Rays away and then complain that no one knows about him or no one shows up for him.
Yep.
This isn't a Rays fan problem. This is an MLB positioning problem, like you said. And I do not want any Rays fans to start targeting other Rays fans over whether they did or did not attend a game. That is not any particular Rays fan's fault. And I don't want people being insulted over that. I wasn't there. I live in the UK. Is it my fault that I could not spend a grand to fly over, get a hotel, and buy playoff tickets? Is that, does that make me a bad Rays fan?
Absolutely, 100%.
It does. It does. But that's not the point.
Yeah, it's not the point. But
yeah, so but the we need to be conscious that we all live lives outside of baseball. Yeah. And sometimes making a game on that little notice at a time that clashes with work is impossible. And we should be angry at the system that's put that in place as opposed to any individual and their circumstances that we know usually nothing about.
We could get into, I could wax very poetic on a societal level about this, but as a society, we tend to see big problems that are caused by people that are, you know, making a lot more money than any of us, and they're causing these problems, and we tend to look at one another and blame each other for the problem because that's what we can see. Let's not do that. You're making a great point. Let's not do that. Let's not get involved in yelling at each other. If you want to direct your frustration somewhere, look right at Rob Manfred. Look right at the puppet the owners have trotted out there to take their hits for them. Or look directly at the owners and the networks and those people that are making these decisions in concert with Rob Manfred. Look at them. Yell at them. If you're going to yell at someone, don't yell at Rays fans. It's not productive. It's not going to result in anything good for anybody. It is what it is. And yelling at other Rays fans who are also passionate about this team is not going to improve anything. We both run a Rays podcast. We were not in attendance for either of those games. And it's because it's not always easy. And like for me, for example, 8 hours of driving just to get there. And then you're talking about having to stay there multiple days. Like there's all kinds of issues that go into being able to go and see, you know, those games. I couldn't even watch the games on TV because of when they were scheduled. I was at work both days. I was following them on my phone. I couldn't even watch the games if I wanted to, much less actually then getting access to the games, which were on ABC, which is a difficult, which you have to pay for a service to get access to. They were just so many walls that were put up to watch these games, whether they were in person, on streaming services, on a network. It was just made so difficult for Rays fans to actually consume these games. What did you expect? And to then go back, turn around and yell at Rays fans is not going to solve anything. Yell at the people who actually caused the problem, not at the people on the ground who are suffering from it.
Absolutely. I'm in no doubt there were thousands of Rays fans, and I do not I'm not being hyperbolic. Thousands of Rays fans that if they could find any way to get to that game, they absolutely would have been there. So just because they couldn't make that happen, it's just really tough to be so harsh and put the blame on them like that. So
yeah,
it is what it is. It's unfortunate. I would love the Rays next year to just go straight to the DS and maybe draw a marquee opponent. Maybe we face the Yankees. Maybe we face the Astros. And then we can get a prime time spot, a tongue twister I didn't expect to be a tongue twister. So Yeah, it's a long and hard off season awaiting us now. Zach, do you have any kind of brief wrap up thoughts on before we do a big review episode on the season at large? How are we going to wrap this one up?
So here's what I'm going to give all of us Rays fans now. I'm going to give you a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel here, because it's been a very tough end of the season. But let me tell you something. This team was not built for one postseason run or bust. If we had put all of our hopes on this season and said, this is it, and we lost this way, I'd be feeling very differently. But guess what? The young guys who were not supposed to be there yet, that were on this roster, they'll be a year better next year. All the guys who are currently hurt, they'll be healthier. Next year will be even better than this year. I believe it, because we're going to get some of the guys healthier. The young guys who are going to be a part of our future are going to be 1 year better. Who knows what kind of offseason acquisitions we're going to look at. We're really not going to lose basically anybody offseason-wise that's major. Or if we do, it will be because we're replacing them with someone who is giving either greater or equal, you know, contribution. This is not the end for this Rays team. This is not the, like, all right, well, we're done. I guess we got to rebuild and do this all again, maybe 5 years. No, there is nothing that says we cannot be right back in the same spot starting the postseason with hope again next year. This team is built for success over time. This is something that Ben used to talk about all the time, and he still does over on his Substack, which you should all go subscribe to and read. The Rays are constructed in such a way to give themselves just as many chances at the postseason as possible. They're maximizing their core and trying to get as many shots at the postseason as they can. And they've set themselves up to do that. Next year is going to be another shot. And they're setting themselves up for another season of success, another season where they're going to be putting their best foot forward and having more guys develop and become better and become contributors that are going to lead to the success of the team. We could be right back here next year, and I would not be surprised. This team is built to succeed, built to contend, and they're going to continue to do that. I believe in this team. I believe they're going to win a World Series sometime in this window that they've created. Don't let this ending sour your feeling, because guess what? We're going to be right back here next season, and we're going to be right here talking about it next season as well. So don't lose faith. Don't get frustrated. Don't, you know, if you need some time from away from baseball, take some time off for a couple weeks to just kind of reset. But guess what? We're going to be right back very, very soon, winning more games, winning postseason games. So stick around. Everybody, thank you for joining us on this episode, and get ready for the success that's coming in the future. Raise up.
Raise up.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLI Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.